Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Monday, October 29th, day number 303 of 2012. We are literally 1 week away from the election. I mean, it seems incredible, all this anticipation. Well, it's just about here. Tonight we'll be talking with Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We'll be talking about the election. We'll be talking about the U.S. Senate. That's also very important, so we'll be talking to Barry about the U.S. Senate. And later in the show, we'll be joined by Virginia Prodan, who is a great activist here in the Dallas area, and she's going to tell us a little bit about some of the work she's been doing with the campaign here in Texas. You know, we know that Romney's going to win Texas, but we got to get out the vote. You know, we got to make sure that we get lots of people out to vote. So she's going to be telling us a little bit about that. Congratulations to the San Francisco Giants for winning the World Series last night. I thought it was an unbelievably well-pitched series by the Giants, and it really shows you that that's what matters in the postseason, is your pitching. But we say hello to Aaron Cleary, the author of Worthless and our sponsor for the first segment tonight. How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Silvio.
How is the weather in Minnesota? Again, we have two guests from Minnesota tonight, so you can tell me so I don't have to ask Barry later.
Yeah, it's pretty much a repeat of yesterday. It was, you know, I don't know, 40s, 50s for a high, and then it'll drop to the upper 20s for a low tonight.
Well, we actually had temperatures, I think I mentioned to you before, that we had actually had temperatures at 39 last night. So we got a little bit of, a little taste of Minnesota last night, Aaron.
Yeah, when it just wait for the snow to fall, then it'll be full on Minnesota.
Yeah, but we never get snow. When we get snow in February, it's like a one-day thing, and we get a nice storm. So we never get pretty snow like you guys do up there. But you wrote a book called Worthless, and I want to talk a little bit about that tonight. Tell us why you wrote the book, Aaron.
Well, I wrote the book because I saw that there was a market, or a better way to put it, I saw an unserved need. There was an underserved need to guide young kids, young adults, into choosing the right degree. There's practically no real effective and adult-like guidance telling these kids the realities of economics and the labor market about choosing the correct degree. The parents usually themselves may not know. They themselves may, you know, don't know the basics about economics. Or they might be spineless. They don't want to tell their kid the realities and break the kid's dream of becoming a poet or an author or something like that. And also there's an institutional kind of racket in the part of education. The education system doesn't really want kids to choose the right degree. They want them to choose any degree, as many as possible, because they make money. That's how they make their cash. So I wrote a book that is a guide for the young person who is contemplating going to college as to how to go about choosing a major that's going to work for them, make their $50,000 tuition bill an investment, not a waste, and make sure that the 4, 6, or 8 years that they do spend in college is spent wisely and not just wasted.
You know, Aaron, one of the reasons, I've, of course, read the book and have looked at it a couple more times, and one of the things I think your book will do to a parent, you know, let's say a guy in his 50s who is now has a kid in high school or whatever, is that the economy that this father went into work, I mean, when he graduated from college, let's say back in the late 60s, early 70s, he went into a totally different economy than his son or daughter is going to go into. The labor requirements are different. Back in the early 70s, mid-70s, you could get a job with a liberal arts degree because there weren't that many of them. But that's totally different now. So the more focused these kids are in real degrees, the better off they're going to be. They're not going to have the advantages that his father or perhaps even his grandfather had when they were looking for a job before. And that sort of came to me when I was reading the book this afternoon or looking through the book again, Aaron.
Right. And what's happened is the market's gotten flooded with people that have degrees. You know, back in the 50s and the 60s, it was a big deal if you had a bachelor's degree or college degree. Most people, you know, went on to become trades, or companies would have a training program, and you would go and work whatever job it is that the company trained you to do. So, and not without good reason, parents back then, the World War II generation and the baby boomers said, hey, college is a great thing. Look at Mr. Jones down there. He went and got his degree. He got an MBA, or he's a lawyer. You know, lawyers and MBAs were considered, you know, top notch. Well, now we've flooded the market. Everybody has gotten a bachelor's. Now everyone has an MBA or a law degree. And as the laws of economic state, you increase the supply, the price goes down. So people's wages are down. And heck, that's assuming you got a job. A lot of these kids, they're graduating, and most of them can't find jobs because the economy is so bad.
That's right.
So what it puts the focus on is you can't just get any degree. You have to get a degree that's going to teach you a skill or a trade that is going to be in demand. And that's really the only reason to go to college, because I know a lot of people say, well, I didn't go there to make money, you capitalist pig. I went there to become a well-rounded person. Well, go to the library and read for free. There's no reason to pay a professor $4,000 a class to tell you something you can go and pick up a book at or on the internet and get for free.
That's right. There's just a mismatch between what we are graduating and what the market is calling for. That's one of the reasons I think your book is helpful, because these kids can sit down and say, hey, you know what? Let's select a major that will actually make us money, Aaron.
Right. And the fear I have is, you know, these kids have been so brought up to not have their feelings hurt and never been told no. That's the biggest hurdle we got to get over.
Right.
Is being able to tell the kids no and tell them the tough fatherly love truth. And if you can break that, which is being a real parent, that's real parenting, telling your kids the truth instead of lying to them, they're going to be much better off in the future, and they'll thank you for it down the road. They'll thank you when they're 25 and 30. Yeah.
Absolutely. When they don't have those loans to pay back, they'll definitely pay you. But the book is worthless. Aaron Clary is the author, and we have a link to the book and the show information. You can also get it at Aaron's website, Captain Capitalism. You can also get it at Amazon, right, Aaron? You can just put it
Correct.
In and order it directly from Amazon. We definitely recommend it. It's a good book, and if you've got kids in high school, you definitely need to read it. Well, Aaron, we'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elvio. We'll see you.
All right, we're going to talk to you later. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with the Prairie Editor right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and tonight we're touching base with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. How are you, Barry?
I'm good.
Well, neither the Yankees or the Rangers were in the World Series, so the Giants made it, and congratulations to the San Francisco Giants. That's twice in 3 years. That's a lot of good pitching there.
It certainly is, and they have an excellent team. The Detroit, like the Yankees, basically collapsed.
Right.
In the, they lost four in a row. They weren't even in the games. The Yankees did were just very disappointing, and so were the Tigers.
Yeah.
I thought they would do better with Prince Fielder, and of course the first triple crown winner in decades, Mr. Cabrera. So you would have thought that they and then with their top pitcher who was just bombed on the
right.
opening game. So it was a very disappointing series. I don't think it was an interesting series.
No.
Nor were the playoffs that particularly interesting. It was just not the best baseball is during the season, I'm afraid.
Well, this year for sure. Now, of course,
yes.
we here in Texas, we got spoiled having the Rangers back-to-back in 2010 and 2011. So it was kind of a difficult thing for us to follow the postseason without the Rangers. But the truth is that pitching will always do it, and I thought it was a fitting end to the World Series that the Triple Crown winner took a third strike, and that was the end of the series. I thought
that was a fitting
way to end the series. Well, you've been traveling, my friend Barry, and I just wanted to say welcome back to the show. It's always a pleasure to have you back. We're going to have you back tonight, and, of course, next Monday night when we're going to make our predictions about the elections. But I just thought this is an interesting detail, Barry, from on this day in history, 1956. We talked before, you wrote an article before at the Prairie Editor, about crises and how things happen during election campaigns. And in 1956, President Eisenhower not only had Hungary to deal with, a rebellion in Hungary, but also a crisis in the Suez Canal, which became a real serious problem for the president. And probably a lot of voters felt better that we had a man like Eisenhower in the White House during this crisis. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that these things, they don't always happen. We think they always happen, but they don't. They did happen in 2000 with the DWI for George Bush, and of course the surprise in 2008 was the mortgage banking meltdown. And in this year we had two big surprises that could that in retrospect we may say were the surprises. One was the first debate, in which was a lopsided debacle for the president, and a terrific victory for Mitt Romney. And the number two was what's going on right now, which is very sad, and we hope that it is kept to a minimum. But we have a historic storm that started as a hurricane and was met by a big cold front, and now is going over eastern seaboard of the United States. And I have many friends in Philadelphia, New York, Washington. I just came from Washington, and many of report to me tonight their electricity is gone. They're sitting in their apartments or houses waiting for the storm to pass.
Right.
And and it will, I don't know what effect it has on the election, other than it will, it certainly isn't going to increase the votes. I don't know if it affects either candidate more or less, but it will tend to depress the actual voting turnout in the places which are hard hit by the storm.
Right, and we send our greetings, of course, to any listeners out in the East Coast. I know we have many in the Atlantic Seacoast area, and I've seen the maps. I have a son who's in the Army in Virginia, and he just told us earlier today that it's raining like crazy. So we send our best to everybody out there, and we hope they get their electricity back. That's always the most frustrating thing when you're in the middle of one of these storms. We had a problem like that here in Dallas about a year or so ago. We lost power for like half a day, and it's so frustrating when you lose power. I mean, there's so much that you take for granted, you know. When you lose power, it's like you can't turn on your computer, for example. You can't do anything. It's really frustrating when you lose power. So we sympathize with everybody out there in the East Coast and your friends and everybody else, some listeners out there. We thank you so much. In fact, it's funny, Barry, because tomorrow night we have two guests, one from Virginia and one from up the coast in Maine. So hopefully they have power so they can call in, you know. Well, we'll see how that works out. Let's talk, Barry, about a couple of things tonight, the state of the race and the U.S. Senate. I'd like to get your thoughts on both of those things. So let's begin with the state of the race. How do you see it with a week to go? I mean, how do you see it?
Well, I mean, it's not definitive. You can't, I think, make an absolute prediction based on what we now know, other than there is no question the trend for over two or three weeks now has been going towards Mr. Romney, and he went from being down and being in pretty bad shape on the Electoral College map to, I think, a general sense that he's, at least in the popular vote, ahead by an undetermined amount, anywhere from 1 to 5 points, including some of the most respected polls even have as much as 6. If that's true, this is going to be a blowout on November the 6th, but those aren't necessarily the numbers we're going to see at the end. On the other hand, the Electoral College is still a battle, although a lot of the so-called battleground states have been also moving not only to Romney, but moving decisively to Romney. I think there's a general feeling that North Carolina, probably Florida, perhaps Virginia, certainly Indiana, certainly probably Colorado, are already in the Romney camp. And then a number of states which are just too close to call, which include Nevada, which includes Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire. So we have a number of states that are not yet determined. Even though some of the polls have him behind, Romney has narrowed the gap almost everywhere. And then of course you have the problem of the polls themselves. I have stated on this show and in my column for some time that the polls are inaccurate because they are improperly weighted to certain kinds of voters that may not reflect the actual voting pattern that actually takes place. So that as it stands now, I mean, if you were a member of Team Romney or a member of Team Obama, you'd probably want to be on the Team Obama side right now because they seem to have the momentum. And there's
Team,
a week
Team
to
Romney,
go.
You meant Team Romney, right?
I meant Team, did I not say Team
Romney?
Yeah,
you said Team Obama, you meant Team Romney, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
I meant Team Romney.
Yeah,
Team Obama is on the defense.
Right.
The president is on the defense. That doesn't mean to say he's going to lose. I'm not saying that at this point. Maybe next week I will have something different to say. Either way, but I think that it's definitely become a real contest. I think the real turning point of the election, I think, especially if Mr. Romney prevails, will have been the first debate.
Right. I think that first debate, go ahead.
Now,
go ahead.
Lot of people think that there's going to be some more surprises. I think we're basically out of time. Now, some surprises can be at the last weekend, like the DWI on George
right,
Bush. But
right.
There's a problem for those kind of surprises right now, and the problem is the storm. The storm is the number one story in the country and will be through Friday or Saturday.
Right.
So
and there was another surprise.
Any disclosure, anything, any thing, not only will it have a hard time making it through that news, but also most people are expecting something.
Right.
Especially from the Democratic side because they're on the – they seem to be they need to get back their momentum. So
right.
It will be treated very skeptically, and you know, Mr. Romney and Mr. Ryan are not exactly individuals who have things that are hidden.
Right.
And so I just think that it seems to be going towards Mr. Romney, but let's face it, the president has. And Mr. Biden, the team, their ticket have a certain advantages. They have New York, Massachusetts, Illinois, and California, and that's a bunch of electoral votes. A lot of electoral votes.
That's right.
Almost over 100. And then they've got a number of states that they have. Although the only absolutely certain, they only got about 10 sure states,
right,
including those five. Those four, and a few others which are much smaller. So Romney will carry, without question, will carry the most states. And the question is, can he win? Of course, most of the preoccupation has been on Ohio. However, it's clear now that the way things are going, especially since Colorado seems to be going to Romney, is that there are other combinations that work for Romney. Without Ohio, he doesn't have to win Ohio, but he may win Ohio, but he also might win Pennsylvania.
Right.
He might win, and I think he's probably going to win one of two, Iowa or Wisconsin, maybe both. Things are looking better for him there. But then again, we don't know. You know, the polling tells us one thing, but we don't know who's coming to the polls.
Right.
All we seem to know for sure is that the Republicans seem a little more enthusiastic than the Democrats this round. It was exactly the opposite in 2008. Clearly, the Democrats were much more enthusiastic, and that reflected in the decisive victory for Barack Obama in 2008.
That's right. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we're talking to our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, also the author of the book Taking Turns. We have a link to the book as well in the show information. But we're going to be actually making very specific predictions next week, Barry, so let's wait until the show next week. But let's go to the U.S. Senate for a second. Again, we'll make more specific predictions next week, but let's look at the trends in the U.S. Senate. How does that look to you?
Well, I have a list here in front of me, and I was going to, first of all, mention both Minnesota and Texas, where we have, in Minnesota, the incumbent, Amy Klobuchar, is definitely going to win big. And in Texas, the Republican nominee is going to win, clearly.
Yes, that's right.
So, and there's a few other states, like Arizona, for example. Mr. Flake seems to be having regained his lead, and that looks like it's going to be a Republican victory there. Not certain.
So far,
because
those
Mr. Carmona has made a very, very strong effort. But then we get to the so-called close states. Now, at the outset, I'm going to be very honest. I wrote early on that the Republicans were almost certain to win control of the Senate, mainly because it was 22 Democrats up and 10 Republicans, and there were many, many incumbent Democrats who were vulnerable. Well, it turns out that that may not come out the way I thought. It may, because there's so many undecided races. For example, the only race that seems a certainty is Nebraska, where the Republicans will win a big victory, and that will be a pickup. That's a net plus one. In Maine, because the Republican unexpectedly retired, an independent candidate who is likely to caucus with the Democrats is almost certain. Mr. Angus King will win, so that's a pickup for the Democrats. So that's that neutralizes that. From then on, it's a bunch of very close contests. In North Dakota, Rick Berg is facing Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat, and Rick Berg seems to be back in the lead, but she has run a very good campaign. I'm being very candid here. She's an excellent candidate, and she's made a contest out of it, even though North Dakota will go to Romney by double digits. In Montana, also a state that will go to Romney by a large margin, Dennis Rayburg is facing the incumbent Democrat John Tester. That race is close. Rayburg seems to have a tiny lead, but you don't know. In Ohio, one of the most contested races, the incumbent Sherrod Brown, who's a very liberal Democrat, has a fight on his hands from a very young and energetic candidate, Josh Mandel. And Mandel finally has gone into the lead by 1 or 2 points, according to some polls today. That race is very close. In Virginia, a race that nobody seems to know who's going to win, Tim Kaine versus Mr. Allen. Both are former governors. Allen is a former senator. That race is back and forth within 1 point. Florida looked like it was going to go back to the Republican, Mr. Nelson, the incumbent Democratic senator, who has never been super popular, but he was being opposed by Connie Mack IV, who is apparently not as good a candidate as Connie Mack III, his father, who was the longtime senator there. On the other hand, Mack, who was trailing by a number of points, did very well in their only televised debate, and the race has narrowed, also narrowed by the fact that Mr. Romney seems to be winning in Florida, even though the Democrats and the Team Obama claims they are not conceding it. It would appear that that's going to go to Romney, and that's helping Mack. I would say that the edge is to Nelson right now, and that would be a keeper. No one would gain. In Nevada, the incumbent appointed Senator Dean Heller was facing a pretty tough battle from Congresswoman Shelley Berkley, but she had some scandals, and apparently he is pulling, he now has a lead of several points. It's not a certainty, but he looks like he's likely to win, and that would be, again, that would be a neutral, no pickup. In Massachusetts, is very interesting. The news for the last week or so has not been good for Republicans. the incumbent, who is a very interesting guy, won the Kennedy seat, Mr. Scott Brown, was pretty much tied or leading his opponent, Ms. Warren. But she seems to have pulled ahead, although a new poll has her only ahead 2 points. So maybe that race is still can be close. But I would think that, I may change in a week. Silvio, we'll make more pointed predictions. But that race is still up in the air. But she's, I think, right now the favorite. In Indiana, we had the Republican who was favored to win easily made another blunder, like Mr. Aiken did in Missouri. And he has now fallen in the latest poll behind. But the Republicans in this race, the national Republicans, although they sort of denounced his statement, they're still sticking by him. And, of course, Indiana will go to Romney by several points. So that race isn't over either, but that is no longer a likely. And that seat is actually held by a Republican, so that could be a loss for the Republicans. In Missouri, after Mr. Aiken made that terrible blunder, and I think all of us, whether we liked him or not, pretty much felt that that was a dumb remark and wrong. And he was pretty much abandoned. But believe it or not, Missouri is going big time for Romney, and it's a pretty conservative state. And Mr. Aiken is fighting back, and now he's almost tied with the incumbent Claire McCaskill, who is the most unpopular incumbent in the country. She's a Democrat, and she was going to lose by double digits to almost anybody else. But that seat is now not determined. I haven't talked about Connecticut. Now, that seat was expected almost universally to be won. It's being vacated by Joe Lieberman, who was an independent who also caucused with the Democrats. So that was a Democratic seat. And it was expected the Democratic Mr. Murphy would win. But Linda McMahon, who ran in 2010 and didn't do very well, but who has lots of money to spend and who seemed to learn her lessons, has made a very strong campaign. And that race is very close. Of course, Connecticut will go heavily for Obama, so it seems unlikely that she could win. But again, the polls indicate whatever they, however we take them, that race could be still close. And then, of course, we have the farthest state away from the mainland, Hawaii, where I, as the prairie editor, have sort of stuck my neck out and said a big upset is possible. I haven't said it's a certainty by any means. And the odds, frankly, favor the Democrat. It's a overwhelmingly Democratic state like Massachusetts. Every top official in the state is a Democrat, including the governor, 2 congressmen, and 2 senators. It votes heavily Democratic in every election. And the Republican Party has very little going for it, but it does have one person. And that is the person, Linda Lingle, 2-term governor, enormously popular, enormously competent, and a very effective campaigner, who's running as the Republican nominee. And she has made the argument that Hawaii, especially if it's going to have a Republican president, a Republican House, and possibly a Republican Senate, it makes no sense for Hawaii not to have a Republican senator to represent their interests, which is a very powerful argument, especially if Mr. Romney wins and the Republicans do pick up the Senate. I have written an article in the Weekly Standard, which is in the current issue online. You can check it out if you want to, in which I argue that the fact that there's a 5-hour difference between Hawaiian time and New York time, East Coast time, gives the Republicans a special advantage, because even though there's only a 2 to 3 hour window between the closing of the polls in Hawaii and the word from from the East Coast in America on the mainland, that's a heavy voting area time when a lot of people coming home from work go to the polls. And in the history in the past, when American elections were determined early, it did they checked it, and the polls indicate that there was a depression of the vote by a couple of percent, which might be the difference.
Right.
So I'm suggesting that because Linda Lingle is a remarkable candidate and already been twice elected governor, one, the last time by a landslide, and is highly respected, that she actually has a chance to pull an upset. I am almost all alone among American punditry, American columnists, to suggest it. A lot of people agree that she's a very good candidate, that they respect her, but they just don't see the numbers.
Right.
I have pointed out that, of course, she's very popular with some of the smaller groups in Hawaii, and actually that's how she won two
right.
elections. And so I'm not throwing in the towel on that race, but it will be the last race determined in the American election, barring recounts
right.
or a very tight election. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that be the upset of the night. If
right.
that happens,
that would, yeah, and
you
of course,
can be sure the Republicans will take control of this.
Right, because as a practical situation, we just need 50-50. The Republicans need 50-50 with Vice President Ryan, and they have the control of the Senate. Barry, I'm going to ask you for a second. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to our sponsor, Avalon Professional Translation, and then I'm going to bring into the roundtable a very, very nice lady here in the Dallas area, Virginia Pradhan. Can you stay with us, Barry? I don't know. I know you just got back into town. I don't know how much time you have. Can you stay a little bit longer with us tonight, or do you have to go?
Well, I think I need to get back to work here because it's just a very intense period.
Right, I understand. I understand. That's why I wanted to ask you.
And if you have another guest, then that should be fine.
Okay, why don't we do that then, Barry? As always, we're grateful for your time tonight. And next week, we're going to really go very specific. Next week, we'll make some predictions, and we'll see how the predictions go. I like what you said tonight. I think it's going to be close, but maybe Hawaii will be the surprise of the night. That would be fun.
Right. Well, I think I was being candid. I mean,
it's
true. I have my preferences and my biases, but I think I was being fair tonight.
No, I understand. You've always been that way.
And I think I was giving those Democrats who have run good campaigns, particularly Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, and Tim Kaine in Virginia, and they're due, and they may win. And the only thing is, in 2006, there were 9 very close races that would determine the outcome. And in order for the Democrats to take control, they had to win 8 of the 9. And guess what? They did win 8 of the 9.
Right, right.
Because by all common sense reasoning, the Republicans should win a net of 4 or 5 seats this time, maybe only 3 or 4, but it doesn't look right now as that's the case. In fact, you could make, and some people have made very good arguments, that the Democrats will keep control of the Senate. And I frankly, I don't necessarily think that's what's going to happen, but I agree that it's a reasonable argument, because the Republicans have had those 2 sure
right.
seats that were thrown away, if they are going to be thrown away.
No, I agree.
Very poor candidates.
I agree, and that's something we're going to have to come to terms with. That, you know, we got to have better candidates. I thought last year in Connecticut we had a chance to pick up that seat, and or Delaware actually. And but anyway, Barry, have a great evening, and we'll get ready for those predictions next Monday.
Okay. Well, I'm going to reserve the right to maybe not make every prediction.
All right. That's okay. We'll let you do that. But as always, it's a pleasure to chat with you, Barry. And thank you so much.
The pleasure was mine.
All right, Barry. Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor from Minnesota, and also the author of that book, Taking Turns. We have a link on the show information for Barry's book. We're going to take a break, and we're going to hear from our sponsor, Avalon Professional Translation.
Sending the right message in multiple languages is easy with Avalon Professional Translation Services. Avalon provides document and web translation in 62 languages. In addition, access to 140 languages is just a phone call away any day of the year. Events, even court depositions, no problem for Avalon. Call 972-404-1213 or go to avalontranslation.com. Avalon Professional Translation Services, global communications made easy.
That's exactly right, and we have a link on the show information to Avalon Professional Translation, and you can click on that and go to the website and talk to my good friend Leonard and tell him what kind of translations you're looking for. Well, let's say hello to Mrs. Virginia Pradhan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Silvio, how are you?
Absolutely great. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I wanted to chat with you a little bit about what is happening here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You've been very active. I see all of your activities in Facebook and in YouTube, and you've been a pretty busy lady. I mean, how do you do all of that?
Well, I believe like all of us, you know, this is maybe the most important election of our lives. And it's not only about us, it's also about our children. And without being too prideful as Americans, we can say it's about the history of the world, because America is a very important power and an important voice in the world, and America needs to remain a free country. And also, America is the country that gives hope to many people around the world.
That's
so
right.
Our election this year is more important than ever before.
Absolutely. And I should add to the audience, I know we've had Mrs. Pradhan on the show before, but she came to the United States from Romania. She's an attorney here in the Dallas area. And her country of origin, Romania. So she knows a thing or two about totalitarian states losing your freedom. And I know when you were back in Romania, Mrs. Pradhan, you were very active fighting for religious freedom, weren't you?
Yes, yes. I defended Christians and churches and people that wanted to go to church. And I defended churches against the dictator who wanted to demolish churches in order to build for him a palace. I defended people that wanted to speak up about the way socialists conduct its business and takes away your property and your freedom of speech and dissidents. And, of course, I became a dissident because socialist doesn't like people to exercise their rights, free speech or freedom of religion and any other right.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And we, I think that gives you a very unique perspective in talking to Americans about their freedoms. I think sometimes Americans take it for granted. You know, they think that these freedoms are going to be here forever. Well, not really. They can be lost, as you lost your freedoms in Romania.
Yeah.
I mean, these freedoms are not—they're not a fact. I mean, they can be lost if people become lackadaisical and they're not interested in politics. Well, let's talk a little bit about Texas. Obviously, Romney's going to win Texas, but it's extremely important that we have a huge turnout in Texas because, as my previous guest Barry Castleman was saying, the Democrats are going to have a huge turnout probably in California, maybe not as much as the last time, but it'll be a lot of votes. They're going to have a lot of votes coming out of New York, obviously Illinois, and these are states that are big states that will give President Obama a lot of votes. And the way we compensate that is by having a huge turnout in Texas because, you know, we're the second largest state. So we got to get every voter out there. We know Romney's going to win, but we have to make sure, Mrs. Pradhan, that everybody understands what you said a few minutes ago how important this election is. So tell me, from your perspective out there every day talking to people, do you think we'll get this kind of a turnout?
Well, I hope so. I believe so. I try, and we all try to do our part. You know, I am a precinct chair, and I am a Tea Party leader. I'm a person who lives under communists, and I created a new YouTube that we're talking about, you know, convincing people that socialism is not the way. And how horrible our life is going to be if we choose socialists on this election. But we also have to go and talk with our friends and make sure that they understand what each candidate stands for. And also, we have so many opportunities. If you cannot knock on the door and go outside, I believe there are lots of opportunities. Just watching TV tonight, I was just absorbing the way Romney has ads and political ads, and the way President Obama has. And like you said, because I grew up in a communist country, I can recognize very fast, you know, the tendency, and with all due respect, President Obama has a lot of tendency of socialism, and even we said soft tyranny, not maybe like in Romania, like the dictator, but has a lot of tendency. Let me give you an example. It's shocking to me that many people don't recognize that. But again, many Americans never experienced socialism and communism, so it's hard for them to pick up those signs. But tonight they were presented another ad when approved by President Obama for his support, where children at school, elementary school children, were singing songs about how horrible their life is going to be if Romney is going to win, and how wonderful it's going to be if Barack Obama wins. To me, it was just a beginning what President Obama wants to show us. He's going to use and indoctrinate our children now, and is doing now in this ad. But after election, if he wins, he's going to do that every single day. With all due respect, when I see those things, it reminds me of our dictator in Romania who brainwashed our children, telling them that, you know, the government will take care of them, that their father is the leader, and so forth. This is unacceptable, to use children in your political ads.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And I think we must have seen the same television program, because I was watching some of those ads myself. And I'm telling you, that is really depressing. And one question I have is, where are the parents of these children? I mean, how can parents allow children to be used in that fashion? I mean, I can understand a patriotic, like, for example, a July 4th patriotic ad that is not politically oriented. Okay, that's fine. But this ad that I think we were talking about, the same one where you had kids talking about, that, like they were saying they were kids from the future, looking back, I mean, talking about the polar bears and all that kind of stuff, that was so bad, and that was so over the top, that it really amazes me, Mrs. Prodan, how the parents allowed their kids to be used in that fashion. Did you understand what I mean by that?
Yes, I understand very well. And people think that, oh, it's cute or it's good for, maybe the parents believe that it's cute for the kids to be, which I don't believe so, or they think it's good for their future they allow their kids, they will be promoted maybe by the government or by President Obama or so forth. But that is something that has to do with our morals. I mean, if we got to the point where the government will take care of ourselves and we do for the government whatever a candidate wants us to do, that we lost something that has to do with our morals, with our self-esteem, and with our desire as American to be independent, which I really believe is not what our American people want.
No, I agree 100%. Go ahead and finish. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just few people, and it's shameful that those people are using their own children, thinking that they will receive a benefit somewhere at the end.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It is really sad, and I guess the only good news about it is that it shows maybe a desperation on the Obama reelection. Maybe that's a good sign that they're so desperate. But not only did they run this ad with children, Mrs. Prodan, you had the other ad with the young woman who was talking about her first time, you know. And I thought that was so over the top. Now, I don't have a daughter. I have three sons. But I do have four nieces, actually five nieces. And, you know, that to me was so insulting that they would use a young woman like that. Incredible.
Yes. And maybe she was not aware of that. Maybe she thought that there was her few minutes fame time or something. But that was so damaging for a young person to be so desperate. And to be part of something. I mean, you're right. It is something that shows desperation from the Obama administration. And it's not morally to use somebody young that wants maybe 5 minutes or less than 5 minutes of fame for something that is so. And they are talking about war on women. They are using women for their benefit, and it's not right.
No, you're exactly. No, I agree with you 100%. As I said, I don't have a daughter. I do have four nieces and actually five, another niece who's a little younger than the four that I have who are in their early 20s. And I'm just telling you, as an uncle, I was offended to see women used like that. And I think it's
also
horrible. Go ahead.
It also says that a party will use all kind of system and all kind of means in order to win. I really believe that we are Americans and we are so different than Europe and, you know, any other countries because we have very good morals. We believe in God and we believe that, you know, we should respect the Creator created us and respect each other. We respect women and we respect kids. Kids are not our instruments. If somebody will do something like this with our children for other reasons, we will talk about abuse.
Right. No, you're exactly right. We're talking to Virginia Prodan, who's a wonderful lady here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, quite an activist. We got a couple of minutes. I'd like you to maybe share with us what you will be doing as we're winding up. We're only a week away from the election, so are there any special activities you're going to be involved in?
We'll be walking around in my precinct. I will be meeting the candidates, Ted Cruz and all the other candidates, the Republican candidates in different areas. Last week they had the tour bus. Congressman Pete Session was with them. Several other candidates travel with them, so we meet with them. I also go and talk with the friends. I go and speak in many places. I use my Facebook and other social media to convince people. I go on several radio stations. I went two weeks ago with Janine Turner to a rally, and I talk about you know, the difference between freedom and socialism, and she talked about the Constitution with her daughter, and that was wonderful when we met candidates. We might have another one next week. So, and like I said, radio and television program that I will be invited, I devote the entire time to share with people what I know and what I notice. Like I said in your program, you know, signs of socialism here, why freedom is so important. Mitt Romney offers us a plan for our economy based on freedom and free market. And
that's,
I believe,
right.
That's a big difference between, you know, government, what President Barack Obama believes, that only government picking or choosing him, not us, him picking or choosing a company that he believes will work for us to support. And in fact, everything was ruined because
right.
That's the way it is.
Socialism, that's right.
And government doesn't produce anything and shouldn't be in a business area.
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right about that. Well, Virginia Prodan, Mrs. Prodan, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you. We learn so much. You're so much. You have great passion in what you're doing, and I want to congratulate you. I know a lot of people who listen love what you're doing, and I just think it's great that you're active in politics and that you bring a really good perspective to our politics because of your experience in Romania. I think that's something that a lot of Americans need to hear more about, and that's why we love your YouTube videos, and we expose them as much as possible so that people can see and hear from you. But thank you so much, Mrs. Prodan, and have a wonderful evening, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Thank you so much for what you're doing and giving us an opportunity to share and help others.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mrs. Prodan. Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with some closing commentaries right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Monday, October 29th, and we're literally a week away from the election. I mean, it doesn't seem possible, but we are. And as I was talking to Barry Castleman, next Monday night, Barry will join us, and we're going to make some predictions. I will give you my prediction as to the popular vote, the Electoral College, and Barry will do the same, and then we'll look at some of these states. I mean, the Senate, I agree with Barry. A few months ago, it seemed as the Republicans were a cinch to pick up the Senate, because you had seats like in Missouri and Indiana where the Republican, or Montana or North Dakota, where it was almost a given that the Republican would defeat the incumbent. Well, a couple of crazy candidates, a couple of stupid statements, and well, it doesn't look that good anymore. Now, we're probably going to lose a seat in Maine because the independent will win that. And that will be a pickup for the Democrats. So that's one that we're going to have to make up. And then Massachusetts. I'm not following that one as well as Barry is, but Barry mentioned tonight that Scott Brown may be losing in Massachusetts. Again, we won't know for sure because there's so many polls. But I tell you, if there is one person, if Elizabeth Warren is elected senator from Massachusetts, I think that my opinion of the people of Massachusetts is really going to drop, because that lady has no business being elected senator of the United States. This is a lady, of course, who made up all the stuff about, you know, her ancestry and all of that. I mean, there's simply no way on earth that woman should be elected. I mean, that's not a party thing. That's just a fact. That woman has no business being elected being elected to the Senate. But it is Massachusetts, and the Democrats do have a big advantage there, and they're probably going to give Obama a fairly significant victory there, so you never know. But I think that would be, for me, that would be the real tragedy of the night, to see Elizabeth Warren elected a U.S. senator from the state of Massachusetts. We're going to be doing a special Halloween show tomorrow night. We'll be talking about mummies and Dracula. Leslie Eastman is going to be joining us. Dr. Ileana Johnson Poe is going to be joining us. We're going to have a little fun tomorrow night. Now, the one thing that we do have to be aware of is that both of our guests are in the East Coast. And with all this rain and power outages, we sure hope that both of our guests can join us. I guess we're not going to know until later tomorrow. But we're going to be doing our show about mummies and Dracula as we look at Halloween. And then on Wednesday night, we're going to do sports. We'll talk about the Cowboys. They had a very tough game they lost against the Giants. We'll be looking at the World Series. We'll be looking at the Rangers. And we'll be looking at the Dallas Mavericks, who will be starting their season, I think it's tomorrow night. They get started on TNT. They're going to be playing the L.A. Lakers. So the Mavericks will be playing tomorrow night. There's a little mixed feelings in this town regarding the Rangers. The Mavericks. Some experts are saying the Mavericks are going to be fine. Others are saying this is a rebuilding year. I really don't know. I want to hear from my two friends, David Busby and Carlos Torres, on Monday night. We'll hear from them as to what they think. I have mixed feelings about the Mavericks. I'm not sure if this is the year they're going to do it, but let's hear from David Busby and Carlos Torres. Well, that's going to do it for tonight, folks. Thank you very much to Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor, for joining us tonight, and Mrs. Virginia Prodan, who is really a nice lady, a wonderful lady here in the Dallas area, quite an activist, and I keep following her on Facebook, and she's got all these things going on. I don't know how she does it, but she really does it, and it's an amazing lady. Virginia Prodan joining us tonight. Everybody have a great evening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Good night.